Here we are. Welcome back to the Disrupt Education Podcast. Allie, what have you been up to? What's going on?
Skydiving, the usual end of season jumping. So that's been really awesome. I just got back from a 3-week trip in Arizona, and then we had our home drop zone, the one I jump at in Wisconsin, end of season. They call it a pumpkin toss. They used to throw pumpkins out of planes. They do not do that anymore.
Seems slightly dangerous. I don't know.
If you're trying to hit like a car on a field at a low altitude, you're not going like all the way up and dropping a pumpkin. And this was like, again, it's still called pumpkin toss. They no longer throw the pumpkins out of the plane, but it carries the name. anyway, to add extra elements of, you know, ridiculousness to the sport. But I'm actually really, really excited about this episode because as people who have been part of the podcast for a while, like I transitioned out of the classroom. And so as Peter and I are always trying to like bring you, our listeners, like the latest and greatest, like people who have transitioned or are disrupting education or like the issues with education, I feel like our guests today have a lot of experience with talking to people who have transitioned or who left education entirely. And so I'm really interested to dig into today's episode, skydiving aside.
Exactly. So I'm going to give a brief introduction to our two authors. The book is Pencils Down. I'm just going to say it right now before we get into the conversation. We read a lot. Allie and I read a lot around education, all different kinds of pedagogy, curriculum, or whatever. I'm going to tell you that these two individuals have put together probably, in my opinion, the most authentic teaching book I have ever read. It does not hold back at all. It tells the real story, which I think many, many, many people going or thinking about going into education or even leaving education are going to find a great path and some real things they don't teach you in teacher school. We have Mike and Nayeli here. How are you both doing today?
Good. How are you?
Doing wonderful. So both educators previously, now out of the classroom. Can you give us a little bit more deeper of an introduction of who you are and what you're up to now? So we'll start with you, Nayeli.
I'll start by saying I'm not a former educator.
Okay, mistake number one.
The closest I got to being an educator was being a TA in college, which, you know, is not even the tip of the iceberg into what educators do. What I did do is I went into corporate America. And so I worked for companies like Sara Lee, Hershey Kraft. They were my clients. And then PepsiCo, I had a long stint there, and then Miller Coors, and left there for a bakery and then a strategy company and digital marketing. And ultimately found that my biggest passion was celebrating people's wins and helping people find their professional happiness. So, you know, every time like someone on my team was promoted, I was like, yes, I was so enthused. And so 5 years ago in January, I decided to make that passion of mine my full-time career. And so I became a coach and started building other people's professional careers.
Nice. And somehow you met Mike, who was in that
like, I think that's chapter
of
one.
Leaving, right? The education world, and you helped coach him. Mike, tell us about your background.
Yeah, well, first let me say that, Peter, you weren't wrong, because Nayeli is an educator, but she's an adult educator.
There you go.
So you're not wrong there. But no, I'm a former teacher and principal in Chicago Public Schools. Taught for around 5-6 years on the west and the south sides, and then I became a principal, thinking naively I could fix the system. So I was a principal for I had an internship, a paid internship, and then two different schools. So around 8 years and 1 year in central office, south side or southwest side in the Gage Park area, and then lastly in the Gold Coast. And so when I left education, it was not my choice. I'm actually, I think, one of the only people we interviewed who did not have a choice. Mm-hmm. I left. That's a whole different story. I cover in the book. And I bounced around a bit, real estate, a nonprofit. And then I was at a nonprofit and they had a board that was just stacked. These amazing people who, you know, did really well in the corporate world. And it was like that old Obama quote where he's like, I've been at the most powerful tables in the room or in the world, right? The most powerful people. And they're not that smart. Right. Mm-hmm. And I realized it for the first time what that really meant. I was like, all right, these are great people. They're wonderful, but why am I punishing myself by staying in the private or nonprofit education sector? I want to try out the corporate sector for a while. And so I reached out to the Oak Park Dads group on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And I said, who has a career coach? And Nayeli, I think three or four people recommended. It's the only person who had repeat recommendations. So I reached out to her. She coached me up, gave me the confidence, gave me the know-how. And I jumped into the corporate world. Very successful transition.
Awesome. And by the way, Allie, we met on the Oak Park Dads group as well. You got to join, Allie.
Apparently, I'm really interested in how, and I'm sure the listeners, right? So, you know, you did this career coaching and then you two wrote a book together. So maybe walk us through, like, how did that even start and the project develop? And ultimately, because you do talk about in the book how it wasn't the initial project you thought it was going to be and how it evolved. So set the stage for us.
You know, ever since I left education, even when I was in the process of leaving, which as you'll find, I litigated my way out. you know, I was in a legal fight with a district, which I, you know, technically won. And I would get a call or an email or text from a teacher or principal, a friend or colleague saying, you know, how do I get out? Right. And I'd say, well, go get fired. It's the easiest way out, was my joke. But I would consistently get calls and people reaching out. And I just say, go talk to Nayeli. And after around the 12th one, I looked at her and I said, this is a book opportunity. Right.
And, you know, I always say, like, once is an instance, twice is a trend. And so we started saying, okay, you know what? We have a lot of people. And it was basically how Mike and I kept in touch over these years was always, he'd be like, hey, this person needs you, or I'm connecting you to this person. And I'd be like, thanks, Mike, how are you? And, you know, when he was like, you know, this is something bigger. And I was like, yeah, you're right. We need to do something.
And I think the thing we realized, and I had this experience too, is that everyone knows someone who left education, who left teaching, but often they went into what we've called education adjacent positions, you know, curriculum sales or curriculum writing or something very close to education. And it's actually very difficult to find people who completely left the education field, who became an entrepreneur or went to the corporate sector or something else. And so we try to find those stories as much as possible. And some of the people that Nayeli coached as well.
I think I know a few of the people you interviewed, it's so cool. I probably do. You know, what's really interesting is as you start through the book, it's an empowering thing. And I went through kind of an emotional roller coaster going through the beginning of the book as you're explaining, you know, we don't want like to tell everybody just to leave education, but here's how to do it. And I think, you know, a lot of people would be better off, because I think as a teacher, I've been in the classroom for 21, 22 years. I didn't go right into the classroom, but it was, there are parts of me, and I may be giving you a call, Nayeli, because I do think about it a lot, right? And, you know, you look at the end of the tunnel, the stories that you told, that people were giving in there is a great, like, diverse just section. You know, I think a lot of people will talk about, okay, the inner city schools and such, like what Mike, you were at, but it's not just that. Can you talk about how you found a lot of these teachers? Like, you know, because just like you said, Mike, it's not easy to find somebody. Like, you know, I've been approached by ed tech. I've been approached by, you know, curriculum writing and such. But to just make a large move way out of education, how did you find these people?
A lot of them were word of mouth, just a friends of friends. few Nayeli coached and she knew. But the first one was a friend of a friend who had worked with someone, Mary, the first story. The second one that we interviewed, Tanisha, she, and so some names are real, some we changed, but Tanisha, was also a friend of a friend. She had worked with a teacher that I had worked with many years ago. And that's actually when the second interview is when we really realized that we had a different book, because our original conception was that we had this, you know, kind of very straightforward technical manual of how to match your teacher skills to which positions, right? Kind of like just drawing lines between the two. And, you know, Mary poured her heart out, you know, very real, very difficult situations. And then Tanisha, she actually called me before we even interviewed her and said, listen, I don't want to sound bitter, right? And I said, tell me more. And that's when we realized that, and Nayeli, you explained it so well, that you know, we had to honor their stories. We had to keep their stories in it. So the idea of the book transformed a bit.
Absolutely. I mean, it was like every interview, and we had a list of questions. We're like, here are the questions we're going to ask in this order, and then we'll dig deeper here. And as we started, we were like, no, these are not the questions. Like, let's just have them. I mean, we still had questions, but it was also more just guided by what people wanted to share. And it was, you know, sometimes it was like, I had this really traumatic thing happen. And then, you know, it forced me to leave. Like, I knew I couldn't go back. And then other times they were like, well, you know, I was kind of doing this on the side and decided to pursue it full time. And so there wasn't like a structure where everyone fit in. And that's when we're like, okay, this has to be more personal story based. This is not a structured interview. This is going to be what they want to share with us.
And a few of the people, though, I remember trolling through LinkedIn, you know, people who, you know, second connections through a school district, to really try to find, you know, careers that we had not captured yet. So we had a wide range of careers that we could profile.
I'm really interested from your perspective, Nayeli, on, so you do career coaching from people who probably want to change jobs or careers in various sectors, not just education. So through this book, or even before this book, what would you say is the biggest difference in coaching a teacher who wants to transition versus someone in a different field, corporate or nonprofits, if there is one?
You know, I'm going to give you a couple of examples, but it's interesting because teaching is, I almost say like accountants or, you know, like doctors, like nurses, you get a degree in a very specific field for a very specific job. So, you know, I've worked with people who were biology majors who are in finance, or I work with people who are like English majors who are real good salespeople. And something about, you know, having your undergrad or completing even a master's in education makes you feel very bound to the career and the profession. And so that to me has been the hardest thing to like hurdle, because they feel like, well, I went to school for this, or this is what I trained for. This is what I wanted. This is what I went to school for. And I think there's a mental, like, this is what I wanted to do. And you don't see that in corporate. You'll have someone who was like a kinesiology major heading up, you know, like a sales team. And it's never been like, oh, I was going to be, you know, kinesiologist. I didn't even know a gym teacher. So, you know, so I feel that there's a lot more like, you feel more bound by the title and the education and the degree than in other fields.
I think that has to do something with education itself. And I think we cover it in a later chapter of like a way to improve education, that, you know, people go into education, not just education, and they say, I'm going to specialize in, you know, primary to third grade, right? Like this super select thing. Mm-hmm. And it just doesn't seem very healthy, because Nayeli's right. In the corporate world, you can do almost anything and you don't need a whole other degree. You just need a certificate or something, you know, a 4-week course. And all of a sudden you're an expert in HR. Not that dramatic, but it's not as specialized. And in education, this is all teachers know. Teachers know, just know other teachers. They only network with those other teachers. And so it's very, very insular.
And to give you an example, Google, I want to say it was earlier this year, removed their college requirement.
Right.
So, you know, it's So think about like spending all this time and all this energy into this field. And you're like, well, I should probably stay in this field because this is what I wanted to do.
The cultures of schools I was in, and all my friends who are teachers, my family, there's a ton of teachers. It's like, mm-hmm. it's more than a job. It's like an identity that yes. you wear. And it's very hard to remove. And even, oh man, I'm going to forget which guest it was who was listening to when I was transitioning and I was like debating if I'm going to go back or not, which I mean, I still leave it open because I still love teaching chemistry and being in that environment. But one of the guests said, just own it. Like you're not, that doesn't have to be you. And it really resonated with me because it's something that you wear. And even when people now ask me like, what do you do? It's much easier, honestly, to say, well, I'm a former high school teacher, like than to right. explain what I do now. And so it was, when reading your book, I mean, I'm reading through these stories and I'm thinking to myself, I can picture so many current educators who can't even envision another identity outside of this, of what it is very insular. So I was just curious with you guys writing this book in that, you know, had people let go of these identities, was it still kind of there in the storytelling? You know, did it seem like they held on to them, you know, for it's such a
oh yeah. Well, you know, one of our Dr. Alejandra, she was talking about like how she still sees her kids at the grocery store. And so it's like you don't shake that person off. And you know, I always tell people when I coach them, I'm like, you don't, that part of you doesn't die. That part of you is still there, and that part of you is still very much a part of the person who you are. Like, just because you're also this other person who's in corporate America, or you're also like, when I walk into a room, I don't stop being a mom because I'm in the business world. And this is very similar, right? You don't stop being, you know, Mrs. Alley or Miss Prim, you know, when you walk in, like that's still who you are, and that's who you are to those people, and that's how they met you. So that part of you always lives on.
And a couple of thoughts I have is that, you know, it's a really good question because a lot of the people we interviewed felt guilty. It's yeah. almost like it was a counseling session, these interviews. They're pouring out their heart why they feel guilty leaving this profession they love, you know. And so that's one thought. And then two, you know, we often hear this about every job, that you shouldn't identify with your job, right? It's just a job. Leave it at the door, go home, turn off. And teachers can't and don't, for many reasons, right? The pace, the expectations to grade on the weekends and all this, there's no time to shut off. But then on top of that, we put teachers on a pedestal and we adopt this persona of, we're a teacher, right? And it means a lot to us, right? So it's hard to turn off, but it's also just not healthy to live your life where you're so embedded and wedded to, you know, something that should just be a job. And not to separate it, you know, I don't want to go down the rabbit hole of like Marx and whatnot, but like at the end of the day, it's healthy to just go watch TV and not worry about your job.
I think one of the things like I was actually thinking about today in the classroom, because we're picking up sub jobs inside, as you know, there's teacher shortages starting to come and different things are happening. It was the first time in a long time, Allie, that I was thinking about hitting the restroom. I'm like, wait, you know, and I heard a lot of people say that in these interviews, and that was interesting. But I wanted to ask you all, like, what were some of the most interesting things like or things that you heard the educators say who are transitioning that was like kind of one, maybe the most interesting or something that was repetitive?
I think that was like the most repeated thing. Right. I can use the bathroom.
I think I had to go to the bathroom 50 times when I'm reading the book. No.
I mean, people don't understand that, you know, it's a ridiculous job in many ways, yeah. Right? And you know, there's all the other jobs, you know, if you work on a factory line, you can't just get up and go to the bathroom, but they actually have more rights, right? When you're responsible for 30 kids in front of you. And there's so much like that. So we heard that, you know, another theme that always pops out at me is Ryan, who, you know, he's a father and he's got kids. He doesn't plan to have any more with his wife. And mine just came home, hence the dog barking. But you know, he says when he looks for a new job, he looks at the paternity policies. Do they actually give leave to the father? Mm-hmm. And he uses that as a way to judge, does the company actually value this family friendly policy that everyone claims to have? But in that conversation, I remember him describing how difficult it was to get leave as a teacher. You know, here we are taking care of other people's children, and yet it's not very family friendly at all to teachers, to principals.
And I would say some of the other things that stood out in one interview, someone expressed being lonely. And she said that during COVID, she kind of put it out on TikTok and she had 15,000 like followers or like views. And she was like, all of a sudden, I felt like I had a community or like I wasn't alone. And so just being alone seemed to be very like a sentiment that was shared by most of the people we interviewed and talked to. And I remember John, he was talking about how he was always in the community. And so even when he was not teaching, everyone had his phone number. And so everyone would call him. And he just felt like there was never a time where you could step back. And so that was another one that people felt like once you're in, like you're on the whole day.
Yeah, it reminded me as well that I think John said, you know, he had to be very conscious of, you know, even going to the grocery store, what you're buying and whatnot. Yes. And that's another unique thing about being a teacher, not just you can't use a bathroom sometimes for hours and hours, but you're surrounded by people, but they're children, even at high school, right? They're not full adults and you're responsible for them. And you so rarely work with a colleague, right? I think at least a couple of people said, I was tired of working with children. I want to work with other adults for once in my life. And as a principal, that's the same case. You're constantly working with, you know, well, that's different. You are working with adults, never, very rarely in fun situations. But as a teacher, you're isolated, even though you're constantly inundated with communications from children coming up to you, emails, text messages, intercom announcements, constantly being communicated with and to and from, and yet you're completely isolated in your classroom.
I mean, I remember being in the classroom and podcasts were starting to become really big. And some of my friends would be like, you know, on your drive home, like, what podcast do you listen to? And I'd be like, nothing. I want silence.
Yeah.
You know, that inundation of communication and being on and performing and all of that is... unless you've been in education, it's extremely hard to emphasize to someone who is not in that kind of performance-esque field. I mean, I would equate it to an equivalent of someone on a Broadway stage. Like when you're on
and those
performances are 3 hours. And if you're a lead character, you still might get breaks, more breaks than an educator. Mm-hmm. Like that's something that I've seen to people with this in teaching. And you know, if you love it, the time goes by so fast. I would say that like when I was in the classroom, like as soon as the day would start, I would feel like it would be over because you just are so busy. Whether that's good or bad, like, you know, it made for a day that would pass and it would be for the most part enjoyable, barring, you know, whatever craziness happened from all of the children and parents and community members. But overall, if it was like a good day, it would be like, wow, that went by really fast. Now this book, right, is kind of getting at a pretty hot topic issue, I would say. Like you're really displaying like, look, this is how you can leave education. So not everyone, I would imagine, is like pro this book. Have you had, right? Have you had tough conversations around this book? Like, has there been backlash or, you know, like just people being like, this isn't accurate or I don't know, like what has been your experience with publishing a pretty disruptive book and kind of putting out there stuff that I would think some people might want kept quiet and under the rug.
So, and Nayeli, I'm going to turn over to you in a second, but because you always hit it right in the head with what you'd give advice to a teacher, right? But my quick thoughts there are that one, and by covering the preface that an old friend of mine who's a professor of education. She's trained lots of teachers. She read the book and she said, you cover some great material. It's very important, but I can't endorse this book, right? Mm-hmm. How dare I ever recommend anyone leave the teaching profession? So that's, we've gotten some pushback, not too much, because I think everyone gets it in the very end. But Nayeli, your line that you always say, it's a great one.
Yeah, I always say, like, would you tell your friend to stay in this job? Mm. Would you make your friend stay in this job?
And if you didn't enjoy it.
Yeah. I think we talked about this. So I had someone call me on the first day of school for CPS, and she said, why didn't I retire last year? Mm. Why did I come back? And, you know, I was just like, oh my God. And she, you know, she was telling me, she's like, I get home, I'm exhausted. Like, I go right to bed. And the weekends, it takes me like the whole weekend to recover. And I was like, why don't you quit? And she said, well, I can't let my kids down. And I was like, what about the two at home? What about them? If you had to pick one group of kids to let down, which one would you want to let down? And she's like, I never thought about it like that. And so if you were in any job and you came home and you were crying or exhausted, like, I would have a really hard time as your friend saying, no, you got to get back out there. The team needs you. Like, you have to do this. We wouldn't say that. You would never say that in corporate. I mean, I've seen people walk out of corporate America being like, I quit. And we're all just like, good riddance. Like, bye, guy. You know, and no one says like, oh my God, I can't believe they let the team down. Or I can't, you know, we don't say that. And so this is like one of those fields where you're almost like, it's a shame if you leave, but there's not enough support systems and well-being to keep you there, to make sure you're okay, to check on you. And so I don't believe anyone should be a martyr in their career.
Mm-hmm. And one of our interviewers even said that, like, don't mm-hmm. be a martyr. That was his tagline, mm-hmm. right? And a couple of the thoughts I had, which is, I had a principal friend who said, when's your book going to be published? I don't want to give it to a teacher. You know, some people have hit a wall. They've burned out. Like, go. Like, why are you sticking around? You know, I coached out half the teachers at the first school I was a principal at. And the way I did it, I brought them in my office and said, listen, every single day you're spending hours yelling at children, right? You have no classroom management. Is this what you want to do in your life? Right? Like, go to another school at the very least. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think teaching and education would be healthier if we had these real conversations, if we didn't expect teachers to be martyrs, if we encourage teachers to just try something else. You can always come back. You don't lose your certificate. You can always come back. But there is a real teacher shortage, but it's been going on for decades. Teach for America would not exist if we didn't have a teacher shortage, especially in some districts. The Illinois Principals Association did a report recently, and they found that it's really only a handful of districts across the state that have teacher shortages, right? Most are doing okay. But we also argue that the pool of teachers is shrinking, mm-hmm. right? All the numbers, the fewer people actually studying it in college, lots of people quitting. It's going to continue to shrink. In fact, I spoke to a professor out in Nebraska a couple of weeks ago, and she said, you're 2 years too early. In 2 years, it's going to be, and she said, quote, hell. In public school, is going to be hell because of the teacher shortage. It's going to just nosedive. No one wants to go in the profession. No one wants to stay in the profession. I'm exaggerating. Mm-hmm. Too many. And so it is somewhat of a controversial subject, but we use it to, one, help teachers who deserve to leave, who deserve a second chance somewhere else. You shouldn't burn out. And there's lots of coaches out there who will charge. There's one very well-known who will charge like $350 for a recorded course online to learn how to, you know, get another job. $14.99, you can buy her book. You know, you should hire a coach. It helped me. But there's good advice out there, and teachers deserve that. And the second thing is, we're trying to use that as a way to leverage a conversation around, we don't need to completely transform schools. It's driven me crazy for the past, you know, 10, 20 years, where people want to imagine, completely reimagine schools. And yes, we need to make changes. Yes, there needs to be reform and improvements. But the thing that I realized when I'm in the corporate world is, we don't focus one iota on the well-being of faculty and staff. I was shocked at how much they care. I was afraid that I wouldn't be prepared for the corporate world. That's a dog-eat-dog world. And I went to the corporate world and I realized, oh my goodness, I cannot act like a principal here, right? Or a teacher. I have to tone it down.
Why is Mike pulling everyone in their office?
Right. Why am I talking to people, you know, with my wagging finger? And everyone's so nice. And this isn't always the case. There are some businesses that aren't always like this, but so many companies have focused on well-being for decades. And I asked my friends, principals and superintendents across the country, what are you doing for well-being? And they'd rattle off this long list of programs. And I'd say, I know those programs. Those are all for the children. What are you doing for the teachers? And be like, oh, yeah, nothing. We did yoga at the beginning of the year. I mean, that's not good. And you can't have healthy kids if they're surrounded by stressed out, burned out teachers. Yeah. So if you don't want them to leave, focus on wellness for the adults too.
Yeah. That's interesting because, you know, Mike and I, we've had a previous conversation around this and I have moved schools, which is difficult. It's kind of frowned upon when you're looking at monetary changes, right? Like you still, like, I mean, you look in like the athletic world or any world where you have a somebody, not saying I'm like a professional, like, you know, Patrick Mahomes here, close, but when you move a school and you've done something great, you know, you do hear the students like, where are you going to go next year? Da, da, da. And then, you know, and then you build somewhere and you build these great programs. But as a teacher, and it's not quite like this all the time as an administrator, but you go to another school and you lose years. It's like, wait, what? So that's even difficult. And I think one of the other things, Mike, that I found, because I did go into administration, I was on a slight administrative side and as a teacher. So it was an interesting role. The amount of unbelievable work that happens on that side. And the other thing is when I tried to take care of the teachers, I don't know what the rule is why you have to be angry at your administration. They don't teach that, but it's like a culture and it's in a lot of schools. It's just like, that's a principal. I can't hang out with that person. I can't talk to them, you know, and it's weird, but yet you try to break down those walls and it's extremely difficult. I mean, I had one of my maybe four or five different teachers that was on a team tell me, I get what you're doing, thanks. And the rest were like, get out of my way. And it's like, I really want to take load off of you and help you out. So in the end, near the end of the book, you have these steps and these conversations and your thoughts on changing schools without giving too much away. Do you mind kind of going over some of the bigger things that, you know, this isn't all just school sucks, get the heck out. I mean, there are legitimate thoughts on the end of this, which I love. And seriously, I know Mike's not going to give his entire story, but your story is one that is, it could be a movie. I mean, it's unbelievable. Just to read that. But yeah, at the end of the book, talk a little bit about, you know, some of the things that are resonate with you right now that are the big things around education and without changing the whole system. What are some ways that people can find that right leadership or the right human resources, if you will?
Yeah, I mean, some of these, you know, we call them moonshots. So it's like fixing the disparity of school funding, right? Good luck there. We couldn't get national standards. So it'd be great if education was funded nationally, like the military, it'd be much more stable, but that'll never happen, even though it'd help everyone. Yeah. But a couple other, you know, ideas that we propose are, you know, like I said, well-being, right? A well-being program can be implemented within sometimes weeks, you know, if not months. And that's a simple fix. You know, I've talked to superintendents and principals and, for example, measuring the email traffic, right? Email should be shut down over the breaks, right? You should not get a single email or ping, including for principals, right? That alone could be a well-being program, right? Another idea, and now you probably talk about this, is you know, hiring teachers outside of the school or outside of education and having a program to where they can come back as well and have it more open and less insular. You know, Nyla, you've talked to teachers who have left and come back.
I am a big believer. So as an entrepreneur, you know, the first thing someone asks you is like, what if it doesn't work out? What if you're, and I'm just like, then I'll go back to what I was doing before. And a lot of people say like, well, do you feel like you would have failed then? And I'm like, no, I built this net to catch me so that I can go back whenever I want. And I think that with teachers, like if you leave and come back, like that's your safety net. You've built that. You have that education, that experience. Like I can't imagine a school being like, oh, you're a former educator, not interested. Like, no, they'd be like, welcome. Here's your classroom. You start tomorrow. So don't be afraid of taking a leap. And if it doesn't work out, you could come back. And we saw that, I think, with Mary's story. And, you know, we saw like even some of them are like, I still substitute teach. And so I think there's that fear of like, if I let it go, it's gone. If you let it go, it's still going to be there.
Two other ideas. One more inspired by Dr. Charles Payne from University of Chicago, his book from back when Arnie was still the CEO of CPS, I believe.
Yep.
But it's Arnie Duncan,
for those who don't know.
Yep. We call him Arnie around here. so much change, or no, so much reform, so little change, the persistence of failure. And he just goes to show that he used one district as an example, but this is anywhere across the country. They implement a program the next year, another program, and they keep looking for the silver bullet without giving it the 3 to 5 years minimum required to actually see the results. Mm-hmm. And so stop throwing on new initiatives, new programs, looking for the silver bullet. Just figure out, you know, one good thing that works and stick with it. Mm-hmm. And our other ideas, you know, around leadership style, you know, theory X versus theory Y, and theory X is more, you know, top-down micromanaging. Those people should not be school principals, because one, you can't manage a school building where you have 30 different teachers in 30 different rooms and you can't observe them all at once, right? So it's theory X leadership style, no, theory Y, more consultative, more democratic. But in my own experience, I think I was that principal, you know, the first few years of my tenure as administrator. And I became a principal in part because I had a principal who was not the healthiest, right? Did not produce the best culture. And I said, I can do that differently. And I think I did for the first few years. But by my seventh, eighth year, I remember looking around thinking, I'm becoming that principal. Mm-hmm. But again, it's because there are so many things pressing down on you. The principal is the one person between the school and the outside community and the district. It's the one point that everything collides and all the expected, and it's such an impossible job, especially in places like Chicago Public Schools, where you are like a building CEO. You're not middle management. You're running that thing. It's just it's a crazy impossible job. And so I would say the best solution right now is to focus on the well-being of the adults.
His story, I remember you writing in your story, 3 years, 12 hours a day and weekends.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Nonstop. And every job has it. Like, Nelly, you always remind me of this burnout in every job, right?
Yeah. There's burnout in every job.
Every job. If you don't have those boundaries. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was a crazy amount nonstop for years.
Yeah. Produced, but not sustainable.
Right.
And you know, one of the things that I'll say has been a welcome change in corporate America is you used to see resumes, and if anyone was at a job for like 3 to 5 years, you'd be like, why are they job hopping? And that's gone.
Yeah.
Now we see people who have been at a job for 2 years and they go to another job. And I'm like, and it's kind of that stigma is wearing away depending on what age your interviewer is. But you know, to see that change has been very healthy, to be like, if you don't like it, you can leave. And there's not going to be these repercussions of like, tell me why you had this gap.
Yeah.
I think that's a trend that's going to continue. I mean, you mm-hmm. hear about the shrinking population growth, right? We have a shrinking birth rate in our country. Mm-hmm. We have, you know, less immigration in some regards, which isn't healthy in a lot of ways, but it's going to be a tight labor force for possibly generations. Mm-hmm. And it might not be as strongly in the favor of the worker as it was during COVID and shortly after, but I think we're gonna have a tight labor force for many, many years. And because of that, you know, teachers should realize that, and, you know, take advantage of it if they want a change, and they can always go back.
That's what I was going to ask you guys about, is what are these skills that you kind of like the top 2-3 that teachers don't see themselves as having, but are like top skills teachers really do bring to whatever skill set that they kind of go into, and just to kind of help those educators who are listening, who think, all I know is the teaching world, none of this is transferable. I can't imagine anything else other than teaching. So what were some common threads that you noticed from educators?
Oh, this is my favorite question. I love skill sets, and I analyze it. I will sit at the grocery store and be like, oh, that person's really good at this. Or I love seeing like what people are good at, where they shine. Teachers, you know, you've probably heard like the number one fear in the U.S. is public speaking. And that is not a fear you can have as a teacher. Like, teachers command the room. They could like come in and settle everything down. And I just remember, you know, as a non-educator, I would see like my kid, like Senora Jacobo would be like, let's do this. And my kids would just like line up. And I was like, wow, like, who is this woman and how does she do that? So I think to be able to, one, have a very strong executive presence where you are in front of the room, you can command the room, you can garner everyone's attention at the same time, and you are a public speaker. That is like a very big like component of, you know, leadership style. And I love, like, to me, that if a teacher's like, I'm just a teacher, it's like, no, every day you get 30 people to agree on something and to move in one direction and the other. And I would rather teach a room of 30-year-olds than a room of 7-year-olds. And then I also believe teachers are very organized, right? Like, in the business world, we say like fake it till you make it, or like I could have these blind spots where I, you know, like the rest of the team could carry it for me, or I'm not very good at finance and I'm going to just lean on someone in finance. Like, a teacher has to be very organized and very prepared and understand what they're going to teach that day. Like, you know, we don't, like, gone are the days where, like, I'm sure one of my teachers was very hungover when on Mondays we would always roll out the TV cart. But you know, a teacher has to be very prepared, very structured, very, like, you are providing a whole day's activity in one day, like every day for a big group. Mm-hmm. You know, think about like a tour guide or a travel guide. They do that for like 1 week and, you know, it feels exhausting. But teachers do that, right? They're organized. They have very strong leadership. They have great presence and they're great communicators. The number one talent that we're looking for this year, I forget which, I want to say it was Forbes or US News, said the number one skill they were looking for in new hires in corporate America was empathy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, who's a bigger empath than a teacher who knows when you're sad, who knows when you're happy, who knows what your reactions are, who understands your home life? Like, that's the biggest empath. So to me, like, all those things and what teachers bring, like, it like warms my heart. And I also want everyone to know, like, if you have that skill set, like, it is very desirable outside of the classroom as well.
And to add one more skill to that is innovative, right? Teachers, you start every school year with an empty classroom, right? Maybe some furniture if you're lucky. And you have to innovate and learn new programs, new technology, all these new things, and constantly learn it throughout the year. And I've yet to see another job where you're constantly reinventing what you do at such a pace as an educator. But what's interesting too, is that especially with AI, you know, where I work now, we have a tool because we have a whole learning division that can create curriculum. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. You type in, teach me how to play poker, whatever. It'll create a whole curriculum. It'll create videos, lessons, quizzes within minutes, right? And so hopefully a huge load will be lifted off of teachers within the next few years, right? But both in the corporate world and in teaching, what that means is the most critical skills, and it is currently, but it's only going to ramp up dramatically, are those soft skills, the people skills and the soft skills. It's not like going to be hard technical skills like coding, because AI will even code now. And so teachers actually have a very strong advantage if they have the people skills, if they have those soft skills, both in education and outside.
Well, before we grab your information, I'm going to ask Allie your final thoughts, but I also want to ask Mike and Nayeli, is there anything else that you want to cap off here? Because the book is Pencils Down. We'll put the link in to where you can find that book. But what are we missing? Final thoughts from you two.
To me, this book was one, like a big partnership between me and one of my clients, which I felt was very warm. And I would say, like, the biggest takeaway is I just want people to know if you're in there and if you're struggling or if you're feeling a certain way, like, you're not alone. And so to be able to share some of my coaching in the back to help someone, if it helps one person, I think it'll be worth it.
I'll add that teaching and being a principal was one of the most rewarding jobs I'll ever have, as the highest highs, the lowest insane lows. But you know, if you're afraid of leaving, just realize that you've done more good, even if you only taught for 5 years, more good than just about anybody else if they have not taught or in a similar profession like nursing. So you've really changed lives, and be proud of that. You can walk away with your head held high. With that said, we can't give up on schools, and we have to continually to demand better for everybody, not just the students, but the teachers and the faculty and staff, to make healthy schools and healthy communities.
Allie, final thoughts.
There are a lot.
Yeah.
And this is such a great conversation. I would say that this book shines a light on a topic that it needs to be had. And it doesn't need to be a taboo topic. That I think is, I can think of many educator friends who they say they want to leave, or they say that, you know, they're done, or they're counting the years until they can retire. And I think the variety of stories that you have and all of the compilations that you guys have put together in this book, from just teachers or people who are in the community or principals, stakeholders, this is the type of book that you need to read to really understand, like, why this crisis is here and maybe ways to prevent it in that the local community, the local school has so much power in those types of programs, and the leadership matters. And so, like, I really do appreciate what you guys have put together so that it can transform school districts that want to move the needle. And so there's, you don't have to look at it as just like, oh, well, yes, if you're a teacher and you want to get out, great. But like, if you're trying to preserve and improve your current system, you kind of need to know what might be going on in your educators' heads that could make them leave, so that you can make moves ahead of that and prevent that from occurring in your local community.
And I'm going to add one last thing. I think every school board member should have to read this book before they become a school board member. I'll leave that there, though. want to give you guys an opportunity to have people connect with you. We'll put the link to the book and how to get to the book. It is Pencils Down. If you're watching the YouTube channel, you can see it right here, but just click on the link below in the notes. There you go. We'll start with you, Nayeli. How can people connect with you and learn more about your coaching?
The easiest way is probably on LinkedIn. So under Nayeli Suarez Gas. I believe I'm the only Nayeli Suarez Gas so far. Or you could visit my website, which is www.elevardevelopment.com, where you could contact me or reach out and send an email.
Excellent. I think I'm the only Peter Hostrasser too on LinkedIn. So guess there. Mike, you have a Michael Beyer, which there are more of those, but how can people connect with you?
Although we did put your email address in the book in your bio, Nayeli. So there you go. Right. Buy the book, get your email address directly. LinkedIn as well. I would love to come speak at a school or an organization. And the company I work for now does have tools that can actually help improve things like well-being, lots of other tools too. But yeah, happy to just talk. And I've had plenty of teachers and people reach out asking for my advice, and I'll give them my perspective, and then I'll point them at Nayeli and say, you know, it's good to have a book, but sometimes you just need someone to coach you through and get you to the next step.
That's a great way to end this one. Mike, Nayeli, thank you so much for sharing. Listeners, seriously, this is the most authentic teaching book that I have read in my entire 22-year career being an educator. Pencils down, take a look. For Allie Privet, I'm Peter Hostrasser. Thank you all for hanging out with us today on the Disrupt Education Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us on this week's episode of the Disrupt Education Podcast. Be sure to like and subscribe so you never miss an episode.
Are you ready to disrupt the educational arena you're a part of? For more ways to get involved in the work we do here at Disrupt Education, check us out at disrupteducation.co or find us on LinkedIn at Peter Hostrasser or Allie Privet.
Our mission here is to help facilitate and amplify changes in the educational system through local initiatives and help you scale them into community movements. Our building network of disruptors in education are working to move beyond scores and grades as the only measure for student learning. If your school district, college, campus, or organization is looking for facilitators of this work, reach out on our website or social media.
And if you have any thoughts or feedback on this week's episode or any episode, we'd love to hear from you. Until next time, keep pushing the boundaries, taking risks, and most importantly, disrupting education.